Ann and Brad both couldn't attend and haven't heard from Jack. So we have Chrissy, Bruce, Lisa, and Jamie. Anyone here for public comment? Okay. And a motion to approve minutes from the last meeting?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? It's approved. The purchase orders are going around. I read it, other than that one Lisa mentioned, I didn't see anything that jumped up.
Too riveting, no.
I read them in the mail. Come back to those. And we have two purchases between $5,000 and $35,000. I have a Rico copier and a, looks like a maintenance agreement renewal.
Yep, maintenance agreement on the servers, and these are the first, finally, we were able to get our MPS, Managed Print Services copiers and printers. So these are the first two that we passed a while back.
Where is this copier for?
There's a big copier right there, and then a little one at the end of the aisle, down here.
Did you get rid of all the other copiers on all the desks, or?
As they run out of ink, they are going to be disappearing.
Okay.
We will not be purchasing any ink for them.
And I did see that Linda put out a little thing, if anybody had these copiers or this and that, that I assume it was excess or overstock or stock or something?
Yeah, stock for ones that are obsolete that aren't being used anymore.
Did we find any takers for any of that, do you know?
No, I didn't dig into it. We're not using them down here. The idea is to get rid of these, not to have more.
Okay.
So, have a motion to approve?
Oh, sorry.
A motion to approve the purchases?
I'll make that motion.
Second?
Second.
And Chrissy?
Yes.
Bruce?
Yes.
Lisa?
Yes.
And I say yes. Thank you. And we have no resolutions. Let's come back to the...
Thank you.
We need a motion for the purchase orders that...
So moved.
People are signing. Second?
Second.
Okay, Chrissy?
Yes.
Bruce?
Aye.
Lisa?
Yes.
And I say yes. Thank you. And that brings us to staff reports.
Remote?
Here you go.
So I'd like to introduce Andrew Esping. You guys haven't met him yet. Andrew.
Good evening.
Hi.
Welcome, Andrew.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Project manager. And he's going to talk a little bit about projects in FOIA that we do.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I don't think I've had the pleasure of meeting any of you guys before. So my name is Andrew Esping. I'm the project manager down here at Information Technology. And I also serve as the Freedom of Information Act officer for the Madison County Board of Administration. And this evening I wanted to come and visit with you guys. I'll just kind of put my thesis statement out to you guys here at the very beginning. We continue to encounter some gray areas and some difficulties in the FOIA process, and I really think a lot of it could be taken care of if we were to get together and work on putting together some ironclad policies and procedures of not just how the Madison County Board Administration and the departments that are under all of you's purview, but also the county as a whole, including the separate constitutional offices, if we were all playing from the same handbook of how to process FOIA requests. And that way, if we ever, I'm going to go through a couple of examples where there is some disagreement, some gray area of how interpretation is made of the FOIA law, and that way, you know, if we sat together and worked those things out, we might be able to kind of avoid anything like that happening at first place. So I'm going to kind of go through some of my examples here. If any of you guys have any questions or comments or anything I say is completely unintelligible, go ahead and feel free to stop me at any point in time and ask. And I think John has kind of got up. I put together just a very, very brief little outline for what I'm going to talk about tonight. The first thing I have is what is FOIA. I'm guessing that you all are familiar with the Freedom of Information Act and familiar with the FOIA process as a whole. I'm not going to read through. These are the first two paragraphs of the Freedom of Information Act. I'm not going to read through those right now because there's nothing worse than a 20-something millennial droning on about something that's overly ideological. So I'm going to pass on that. I would highly recommend that you take a look at it at some point, because I really think it captures the spirit of the Freedom of Information Act. And that is basically this, that the Freedom of Information Act exists to promote transparency in municipal and local governments here in Illinois. And the FOIA, it's an open records act that instructs public bodies to comply with the release of relevant public records at the behest of those who would request such information. And requesters would be citizens, any U.S. citizen, media, nonprofits, et cetera, et cetera. So the question might be asked, why would we discuss FOIA process in the Information Technology Committee? And the reason for that is one of the most common requests that we deal with on a regular basis is a request for electronic communication, so email. And information technology is the repository of emails for the county and the separate constitutional offices. And as far as I know, aside from some of the procedures and whatnot that was put in place by Chris Bethel, I have not been able to find an active FOIA policy for the county right now, or an email policy, something that goes over, how searches are done for responsive records for FOIA requests or email retention either. And I've looked through the county's email, for the retention policy. I found it referenced, for instance, in the personnel policy handbook, but I haven't been able to locate that specific policy itself. I spoke to Tricia Lack a little bit, and she mentioned that that had been something that was under consideration in the past, but for one reason or another, it didn't materialize. So I would like to kind of begin my examples by going through the procedures that we are currently following right now and kind of what the FOIA process should look like. And I should have that up, right here. So the first thing is obviously receiving a request. Anytime that we receive a request, it has to be in writing for it to be a valid Freedom of Information Act request. And the law itself does not give a lot of oversight to the administration of the FOIA process. The only thing that it requires is, number one, is each municipal body, public body, has to have at least one FOIA officer. And number two, that any time a request is received, the date that it was received has to be written on the request, and the deadline for response, which as you guys know is 5 business days, also has to be written on the request itself.
Now, Andrew, one thing, I don't know for a fact, but you are the expert, if it has to be written or not, because you can walk upstairs and ask for an agenda. And that's a formalization for the process, I was told. But I don't know. That might be something to look into.
I know is that, you know, when I was taking the training, reading through the law itself, it goes over and says that it has to be written on the actual document, whether it's kept in electronic format or whether it's kept in paper form. So that's the way that I've chosen to do it. So I'll give you guys an example. I received a request probably about a week ago asking for Mike Perkins at Animal Control's resignation letter. So the first thing is obviously the request is received. We compute the deadline for response and also write down on it, you know, what day we received it. The next is determining the breadth and ownership. Now, like I've said, I'm the FOIA officer for the Madison County Board Administration. As defined by our legal counsel, the Madison County Board Administration is the county board and those departments wherein the chairman appoints the department head, and it is approved by the county board. That's the area of our jurisdiction, and that's where we handle FOIA requests for. So in looking at that request, a resignation letter for the director of animal control, it seems like that would fall under the jurisdiction of the Madison County Board Administration. So once ownership is determined, we move on to the collection of the responsive records. In this case, that's real simple. That's a phone call to Mr. Perkins and saying, "Hey, Mike, I have a FOIA request for your resignation letter. Could you go ahead and send that over to me?" Which he did. And then the next step in the process is the examination of that record for any potential exemptions. I've listed the exemptions that are mentioned in the Act right here. Most of the ones in the Madison County Board Administration, we don't interact with those. The only ones that we really ever have to deal with would be 7.1b, private information. And in the Act, that would be defined as Social Security numbers, personal home telephone number, home address, something along those lines. And then 7.1c, which is personal information. And there's, it's kind of a gray area in and of itself, because personal information in the Act is defined as information that a reasonable person would find highly objectionable. And I guess you would have to define what highly objectionable is and have to define what a reasonable person is as well. But in the case of Mr. Perkins' resignation letter, no, there is no exempt information discovered in that. We would move on at that point to the fulfillment of the record, or in some cases where there's exempt information, a partial fulfillment, partial denial, or in the case where everything is exempt, a full denial. In this case, the information was sent to the requester, and that's pretty much the whole process right there. The information is almost always sent out using our ServU file transfer system, just to maintain confidentiality and to make sure that any of the information that we release, instead of just attaching, say, the PDF, or if it's emails, a .pst file to the actual email, it's better to send it through the ServU file, because that gets around the Barracuda filter that we have. So if there's anything that would be caught by the Barracuda filter, the ServU file is able to kind of go around it that way. And then finally, another thing that we do is we often assist other constitutional offices in the FOIA process. That would be, say, whether it be the state's attorney's office, the treasurer's office, will often ask us for records that we are the repository for, to go ahead and pull those records for them and deliver those records to them to then be reviewed and ultimately sent out if they deem so necessary through a FOIA request. So that should be the normal, simple process. It doesn't seem all that complicated, but unfortunately, those type of requests are often the exception and hardly ever the rule. There's two examples I want to take you through real quick that form the bulk of the FOIA requests that I've dealt with in my short tenure as FOIA officer. My wife and my mom often say that I'm a drama queen, and I have to admit that they're absolutely correct in that regard. So I call this the impossible choice. We receive a FOIA request asking for records that are owned by a separate constitutional office. Just to give you an example, just last week I received a request for records that were very clearly owned by the treasurer's office. It becomes a gray area of how we are to proceed in matters like this, because we don't have jurisdiction. That's a separate constitutional office. And so we have sought legal counsel, and we've been given some back and forth conflicting opinions on how to proceed. We have heard from the public access counselor, which, as you guys know, is the department of the Attorney General that deals with the enforcement of the Open Meetings Act and the Freedom of Information Act. The public access counselor says if we know that another constitutional office has the record sought and we have the request, then we are required to turn that request over to the constitutional office, and then they take ownership of that request, ultimately having to fulfill the information as required by the Freedom of Information Act. The reason they state that is because it's not really fair to assume that just an average citizen would have ample knowledge of where records would exist in, say, county government. Therefore, the assumption is made that we do everything within our power to be able to assist the requester in that process. According to our state's attorney's office, that's not how we're supposed to proceed. We are to reply that there are no responsive records found in the Madison County Board Administration, and we are not to forward the request because a forwarded request has no legal obligation, because in the instance I just talked about, the treasurer, if I were to forward that on to the treasurer's office is not the original recipient. It's the Madison County Board Administration that's the recipient. Therefore, we are the only ones that are legally obligated under the Act to respond. In addition, the state's attorney's office has commented that while it might be admirable to inform the requester where the records might be located, the concern is that doing so will place an undue burden upon other constitutional offices who might find themselves busily having to fulfill FOIA requests that they normally, I suppose, wouldn't have to fulfill. And then Mr. Dorman tried to kind of negotiate a little bit of a middle ground, saying, okay, well, what if we respond in cases like this, where we receive a request for records that belong to a separate constitutional office, can we respond that we, the Madison County Board Administration, have no responsive records? However, Office X has those records, and Office X's FOIA officer is insert name here, email address, this is how you contact that individual. And our legal counsel said that was fine. So here's my concern. We've been giving some conflicting opinions, so as these requests, where they're seeking records that are oftentimes split between the Madison County Board Administration and other separate constitutional offices, as those make up a bulk of the requests that we receive, we have to make a decision on whose advice are we going to follow. Are we going to follow the Attorney General's advice that they've given us? Are we going to proceed following with our state's attorney's advice? I have chosen to follow the latter up until this point, because from my perspective, if we were to end up in any type of litigation over a FOIA request, it would be the state's attorney's office who would be charged with defending us, and therefore it only seems fair to go about conducting FOIA responsibilities the way that they ask us them to be conducted. And I will have to say that several of our requesters have been frustrated with this, with me responding that we have no responsive records when they know that the records exist somewhere, they just don't know where. And we have at least two requesters who are threatening litigation over basically them not being able to get the requested records or the request from their perspective not being passed on to the appropriate constitutional office. So that's example number one of where if we had like a set policy and procedure of where we could open up the book and say, okay, we've been asked, we have, the Madison County Board of Administration has been asked for records belonging to the treasurer's office. Here is the way we're supposed to operate in that specific situation. That would help clarify a lot of the gray areas surrounding that. One more quick example. Let's say that we receive a FOIA request for electronic communications. I'll use a pertinent example because the gentleman's in the room. I received a FOIA request towards the end of 2017 for emails from Mr. Thompson there in the back room. And part of the emails that were discovered that were responsive records pursuant to the request were emails that were originally sent from a separate constitutional office. And so I sought legal advice on how to proceed. Do these emails belong to the recipient? Are they now property of the Madison County Board Administration since that's where those emails lie? Or, because they originated in a separate constitutional office, are they property of that constitutional office? And the response I received, and I understand that, you know, a lot of this is gray area, and sometimes it's hard to be able to give definite advice. I'm not trying to throw anyone under the bus when I say this, but the response was, I'm not really sure how to be able to direct you with that except to say that if those records exist and under the authority of the Madison County Board of Administration, then they should probably be treated as responsive records. Yet, I get concerned in that process because, you know, we don't want to be accused of interacting with emails that don't belong to the Madison County Board of Administration, even though that's exactly where they were found. So, the FOIA officer's duties walk a fine line between the elected offices, such as the state's attorney, the treasurer, the auditor, the recorder, the public access counselor, and office of the FOIA law. So from my perspective, without policies and procedures to be able to guide us in this and to be able to tell us exactly what we should do, we're kind of flying blind to some extent. And that's not a position that I find comfortable, and indeed it's a position that can be often stressful at times. So in light of all this, my recommendation would be that I'm not sure how it would happen because I would admit fairly, I'm relatively new and I'm probably ignorant about how a lot of things operate, but my recommendation would be that there be some cross-the-board collaboration between the board and the different departments and the constitutional offices to once again develop that FOIA policy for the entire county where everyone's playing from the same playbook. I think that would help clear up a lot of the air. One of the things that I have begun doing is getting the FOIA policies from other counties like DuPage County, Lake County, McLean County, these are coming in. I think the best thing to do would be to compare all of those and contrast and see how other counties are doing it, what other best practices might exist, and we might be able to start walking forward with a path from that. Another recommendation I might have is I know this happened before, but the public access counselor often will do localized trainings in the Freedom of Information Act. I realize that happened several months ago, but I think it might be worthwhile to go over again just regarding some of the concerns that have taken place recently. So, with that, that's the conclusion of my report. I'd be glad to answer any questions to the best of my ability.
Yes, I think you've done some of the things that I thought is one, I don't want to reinvent the wheel.
Right.
So let's see what other counties' practices are, see what some of their information is, and then bring it. I would guess this will go to personnel to develop a policy.
Government relations, I would think.
Or government relations.
Yeah.
One of the two, whichever committee is best suited to help then formulate what the policy should be. But I say get the information and then let's present it to government relations or the other one, whatever one, whichever one you all deem the right committee to get a policy, because I agree, I think we need a policy so no one gets in trouble.
So we never had one, or no one can find it?
Here's what I've discovered. On the website...
How come other counties have one and we don't have one?
On the website currently right now, under the transparency portal over on the left-hand side, there is a section of the Freedom of Information Act, and there is something called rules and regulation. But it's pretty broad. I think it's about three pages. And it does go over it's more so for requesters is the way I would put it. And also it was certified, ratified, whatever you want to say, as a policy in 2009. And the law went through a major overhaul back in 2014. So I don't think it's really able to address some of the concerns that we would have in 2018.
Another thing, what we did is we inherited what I call, I made this up, a unitary system where all the emails were in one group, okay? And since that time, as we all know, the state's attorney has been very upset in August when on this issue. And so soon thereafter, we started to, as we all know, we had open outcry tax sales 20 years ago because there was no technical alternative to that. Then Joe Meyer Company invented that, the automated tax sales. So lo and behold, we have something called Office 365. So after State's Attorney Givens was so upset about things, this department started to work on that.
Well, we were actually working on it prior to that because we had an issue with the Barracuda filter for the Sheriff's Department, and we found a solution, and then we thought that we could apply that to the Sheriff as well.
But I will say, during the first 6 months of this department, look at the major accomplishments. I mean, HR information systems, management services, a standardized purchasing policy for computers, all incredibly major things and good things. But so then we have this inherited system where all the emails are in one big garbage can, okay? And I don't have the problem. I'm not going to confuse anybody with technical jargon. But that's the path then, like what Rob said, the path then was to look around and see what's out there to, because I was aware as treasurer, when I was treasurer, I was aware that legally I could have created my own IT department. I could have had my own server, but it was generally not done because it just wasn't cost efficient, and also the expertise is very specialized and was here in IT. So I think that from what Rob has said too, I was aware that that this has been looked at, and I think that isn't it true with there are some great opportunities with Office 365 to basically keep the center of the expertise here in IT, but give constitutional offices more control over their emails. Is that fair to say?
What a great segue to introduce Joe. You can speak to that. Yeah. Joe, briefly, can you explain the network current state and future state?
Oh, yeah.
Your proposal?
Can you kick off? Regarding the deal, I'm going to kick it up.
Do you want to get up there?
Okay.
All right, you lead this guy?
Yeah. Joe's been here for a month. You guys haven't met him yet.
I think I peeked into one of these once, like the first day I was here.
State of Illinois uses Office 365.
Okay, this is just part of the network right now, and one of the major problems that I've found security-wise. Right now, the network relies too much on Active Directory for its security. VLANs, these are virtual local area networks. They should be set up per department. That way, each department has their own network. And when they go into the switch, on the ports or the interfaces, the actual physical interface, you're saying this machine plugged into this interface has access to this VLAN. Right now, you have two switches on each floor here, and one VLAN per switch. They just made that switch an entire VLAN, the other one an entire VLAN. On most of the interfaces, whoever's plugged in has access to both of those VLANs. And it shouldn't be like that. So we are going to move forward with creating single VLANs for each department. We're not going to just create them and throw people in there. We're going to do it orderly, talk to the departments before we do it. But also, there is no IPS or IDS internally inside the network. Intrusion prevention systems and intrusion detection systems. This allows us, the hardest thing for people to defend against is an insider threat. That is by far the most important thing you got to defend against. And they don't really have a defense inside our network for that. It's assumed everybody's trustworthy and maybe they did a background check and they figure everything's okay, but you can't do that. You need to have something in place where if somebody is going to do that, you're going to be able to see it, it's going to be logged, hopefully prevented. Two places where this needs to go, I still need to look at the overall network and figure out the best strategy for putting them into place, and I'll be talking to vendors and looking for advice on how things are set up, but your server farms. Let's say you have a department, you have a department, you have a department. Say you each have drives you need to get to. To get in there, you're going down your, over here, you're going in through your VLAN, going into the switch and the router, and you're getting routed over to your server farm. But everybody else is going through there too. You need something to make sure nobody's trying to hop VLANs, which is a threat where they can maliciously hop into a VLAN they're not supposed to be in. So you want to have a view of everything. And you definitely, it's like when a rocket goes up, you're gathering data. If everything's good, that's fine. But if something goes wrong, that's when you need your data. That is when the data is the most important. Find out what went wrong and what we can do to fix the problem. The best way to describe a VLAN would be like if I gave you each a cup of water, filled the cups up with water. That's your water. If he wants some of your water, you can give him permission. That would be giving them permission in the port. Right now, you have an empty pitcher. Take all your water, pour it into the pitcher. How do you know what data is yours, and how do you know what he's getting is not your water? That is your state right now in the network. So that is what we're working on addressing. Any questions?
No, but this has been going, this is how the system has been set up for years and years and years, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what we inherited. Yep. So that's the importance of the pen test, is we're going to do internal first.
Mm-hmm. External. For the penetration test.
External.
You want the external core on the outside, you mean, to hit first.
Okay.
For the pen test on the inside, we need to have our devices in there first.
Okay.
So whether we want to do it a two-prong attack with that, or we want to do it all at once, if we want to do it all at once, we've got to harden the inside first.
Yeah, I thought you wanted to do the inside first.
I do want to harden the inside first.
Okay.
But you have to fix it first before you want to... tested.
Yes. Because that way.
Because otherwise, it's just an open book. It's
exactly.
It's a big picture, or it's an ocean.
Exactly.
And so everybody's in there.
And I can't see without anything in there. Whatever they're doing, they can say, "I attacked his computer. We were able to get onto his server, got everything." I can't see what happened. With those devices in there, you'll be able to see it.
Well, you won't even be able to get there.
Hopefully. Well, I mean. I've been part of a lot of red teams. I haven't been on the red team. I've been on the receiving end. You get a good red team, they are going to get in.
Thank you.
No network is completely safe.
Ever.
You've got to limit your vulnerabilities. Risk is always accepted at a certain amount. You can harden this where it's really, really, really hard to get in there, spending millions of dollars. But companies and government entities have to decide what risk are we willing to take, what risk aren't we willing to take. Everybody loves to say they don't want to take any risk, but the money it involves to do that, you can have an air gap system. never been on the network, not touching the network, they can hack that now. They're able to jump onto air gap systems. Yes, I mean, you're probably not going to have a UAV attacking Madison County where it's floating in the door looking at bleeps that are coming on a hard drive, like, but nothing is going to be completely safe.
Thank you, Justin.
Okay.
Okay. Chris, you want to talk? You got anything?
Thinking about the about this side? No, I definitely think this is the right way to go about hardening the network.
Yeah.
Because it's just, it looked like, I mean, right, I think it was originally, as Joseph was pointing out, when the switches were set up as the VLANs, I think that was set up more as a convenience kind of thing. And I mean, and from that standpoint, I mean, the switch is isolated, but it's definitely the right way to go by actually isolating it by the individual departments doing that. Because that kind of hardening will prevent any unauthorized access.
And roughly how much does that run?
Cost-wise?
Yeah.
Just labor.
The VLANs themselves?
The VLANs themselves, yeah.
Oh, just labor.
Yeah, just labor.
Yeah, we might have to run a couple cables here and there. Yeah, now that IPS and IDS and all that is going to...
Oh, of course, yeah.
That's going to cost. The hardest part is already taken care of.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. People are interested in security here.
Okay.
That's the hardest part.
But you said something...
The internal is going to cost.
Yes.
The internal... Detection.
Yes.
Will cost.
Yes.
The detection system would cost,
yes.
Yeah.
The detection system, where? Again, slow down, now I'm not.
Okay.
So
modifying everything so everybody has their own individual pool is going to cost nothing other than the labor.
Right. So I make each department its own. IT,
yes.
Make, well, obviously, maybe not you all, but. The recorder, the treasurer, and then all become individual entities. And that doesn't cost much.
No, other than labor, no. Not from
but
the
then what costs?
The intrusion detection system that we were discussing would cost money.
Okay.
So are we looking at that for 2018 or 2019? Is it something we need to
forecast? I would like
it
as soon as possible. But that's up to... I guess the committee and the board to decide what they can do and when they want to move on it.
What kind of ballpark are we talking? Are we talking thousands or tens of thousands?
Tens of thousands.
Well, we might need to budget for it in 2019 rather than do something big that's not budgeted for.
Correct.
Can I ask a question? So right now there's... We don't have any proof anything's happened, right?
Right.
But this ocean of data, is it emails? All, the only thing
everything.
I know of is just the folders on the server.
It could be folders on the server. It could be individual machines getting hacked. It could be the emails that you're talking about in the individual server. It could be something attaching to the network, acting like it's a device that should be on it. That's not... Things like that allow people to do like website spoofing. I can't remember the exact term for it, but you're going to a website.
Phishing.
Yeah, not phishing.
Man in the middle?
Man in the middle, that's it. You can allow man in the middle attacks, things like that.
So if you get a phishing, I mean, I don't know all the words, but if somebody gets in, they open up a phishing email, right? Will this compartmentalize stuff? I have not everybody going to one ocean of data. Will this... Like, if someone lets a virus in, will this compartmentalize it?
It should. You're talking about the hardening the internal network?
Yeah, splitting it up,
yes,
putting
yes.
everybody's stuff differently.
And there should, if there's signatures on the IPSs, those are the intrusion prevention devices, a lot of things will be blocked at the intrusion prevention device.
But isn't that the problem we got into with the sheriff's department? Because if you're blocking things, then you're blocking information they need to send in and out.
That's email. And that's a social security number that's being blocked by our Barracuda system, which leads to Office 365, and I guess I can speak to that. That will fix that problem because they will be on their own email server in the cloud, and they will not be going through our Barracuda filter. Okay.
Which means they could make a mistake and send out a social security
number. They can, but that's on them. if that's what they want, we can allow them to do that. And they only send other police agencies. But the great thing about it is that everything they send can be encrypted on Office 365. So they're in compliance with the law. So even if they do send something out erroneously, it's going to be encrypted. And that's what the law says, is that it has to be encrypted when they're sent out. We did hire a new guy. He started today. He's familiar with Office 365. So we're a little bit behind schedule on the testing, but by next month we should have something up and running. I met with Chief Judge Hilla last Friday. Chris was on the call. Chris has been sick. And Joe came in. We talked with him. It's something he's arrested and he's aware of it. So that would be the state's attorney, Chief Judge Hilla. We're actually going to be doing a presentation to all the judges. They meet once a month. And he said it's too late for now, but in the April meeting we'll probably make a presentation to him.
And how much is Office 365?
Ballpark figure, it's like $1.45 a person per month, and then another $3.50 for servers, is that right?
Yeah, something like that.
Per person per month?
Yeah.
1,000 people here.
Yeah. Well, not everybody would be on it.
Oh, okay.
It'd just be special entities that have a requirement for it.
Okay.
That's the plan. Not even everybody in the sheriff's department has to be on it, just key people. But if we get 50 people on it, we get great pricing. And I discussed, and I don't know where we are in the agenda, but I discussed with Mr. Rakowski that for his department, Cadillac package would be $3,000 a year, about $3,500, which is 18 people.
Any other staff reports?
No, and I guess I discussed old business.
Okay. And new business, Mr. Rakowski.
First off, I apologize for the phone call, but I'm monitoring my mother's health by the minute.
Sorry.
And then some. I sent you a proposal. I've already told Criminal Justice earlier at a prior meeting that I'm asking everybody to hold that proposal, but I still ask to appear. Quite honestly, when he starts talking about VLANs and stuff, my eyes glaze over. It's way above my pay grade in terms of technology. I have a problem. I need to address that problem. But as I explained to Mr. Chapman when I was talking to him with Criminal Justice, while I want to fix it, I'd like to fix it right as opposed to fix it fast. And so I'm, basically, you have the one proposal. First off, it was pointed out to me that maybe I ought to get a couple other proposals, which seemed to make some sense to me. And the second point is, Rob came to me and said that, was explaining some of this 365, at which time my eyes glazed over again. I don't totally understand it. Was watching this and the proposals. And I somewhat understand how it segregates out and protects my email, which is one of my two concerns. It's actually, for me, the lesser of my two concerns. The stuff that I am deeply concerned about are documents that we create within the office. They're highly confidential. They're litigation type things. And I don't quite understand, and I will come down and talk to these people, how that gets segregated out, that nobody else would have access to it. Because, quite honestly, when it doesn't work, I gotta call somebody. It's, like I said, it's way above my pay grade. And, I can't be the administrator to the program.
Correct.
That's just not practical. And I can't even sit over the shoulder of an administrator of the program and have any idea what they do. I've come down here the other day and they put some stuff on the computer so I could look at my email on one of my laptops. And I mean, he clicked through 14 screens in less than 10 seconds.
And you had to sit there and read each one of them.
And I got no idea what he did. I mean, okay, it's done. You know, and I don't know what he did. And, so I need to understand, to be sure that, you know, whoever's doing that, I've got some control over, and I got some guarantees and that. So I'm slowing basically the whole process down about 30 days or so while I try to gather some of this information and some knowledge. And that's where we're at. I am, as I put in my letter, 150% convinced that some documents that were put into the ocean, that I put into the ocean, have been looked at by people who shouldn't have looked at them. I got that basically, and I ain't pulling any punches on them. I'm not got a dog in the fight. The police came to me, showed me some stuff, and said, we found this on certain computers. Did you send it to these people? And I said, I sent people it was addressed to. I didn't send it to other people. And, you know, so that is of some concern. Now, what I don't know for sure, and I didn't ask because it wasn't in my bailiwick, was I don't know if they got it by looking at the recipient's stuff or my stuff. But since we're both on the same system, it means the system ain't secure. And as I put in the letter in some detail, why I need that security. So I just really wanted to come down and kind of give you a little briefing as to why I'm doing it, answer any questions about the legal aspects of what's driving me, and get that part out of the way, and tell you that, you know, until I have a little bit better grip on things, I'm not going to ask anybody to vote on anything, because I don't, you know, if the guy who's asking you to vote can't answer your questions, you shouldn't know how to be voting on it. And that's where I'm at in this thing at this moment. And but I am absolutely 100% set on being sure that my office is secure from prying eyes and, to use his term, internal threats, because that's a threat I know of. I would like to be secure from external threats too, but I really don't think the Russians are going to spend much time hacking into the Madison County Public Defender's email.
Never know.
But you never know. But I say that somewhat glibly. But I mean, you know, the county security that keeps external people from getting in, you know, from my point of view, that's secure enough to satisfy me and I think the Supreme Court of Illinois. At the moment, the internal safeguards are not good enough. And that's why I need to do something. This was what was recommended to me when I talked to some IT people. I then went out and talked to Fowler after I talked to some other people, and they gave me the proposal I sent. I am now having other people look at Fowler's proposal. Plus, I happen to just be lucky. I have a IT security architect, whatever the hell that is, who's married to one of my lawyers. Works for Wells Fargo, which is a highly secure network. And he has been kind enough and gracious enough in return for a few cocktails at night to sit down with me on several occasions now and explain to me things that, like I said, I just don't understand about these systems, and I'm trying to learn as fast as I can. So that's why I'm here, and that's where I'm at, and I am 100% committed to being secure, because it is vital to my clients, it's vital to the court system, and as an aside, it's vital to my law license, which I'm kind of partial to. But, you know, I want to get there as quick as I can, but I'd like to get there correctly.
Okay. If you'd like to talk again, I can, and we can go over the cloud-based system that you mm-hmm. have, and more detail, because I know that we just gave you a cursory, mm-hmm. but if you use the Azure server, all your stuff will be on that. And I have ideas mm-hmm. that I think will satisfy all your needs. If you want to talk offline.
Yeah, and I'm happy to sit down. And like I said, I'm gathering information as fast as I can, consistent with all folks, so trying to keep the jail empty.
Okay.
Which I think with the cloud solution and what Jeff was talking about, the network, you're going to be able to isolate your department, so no one but an admin is going to be able to see things, and you'll never get around an admin of some sort being able to see things. You got to trust someone. So I think you got solutions on the way.
So it may be, but you know, then we got to, you know, when we start talking about admin, like I said, you know, I don't know how to, you know, as dumb as it sounds, I don't know how to monitor an administrator. And at the moment, I have some concerns about the internal.
Well, we can't manage the county by rumor.
What was shown to me wasn't rumor, it was on paper.
Well, what was improperly shown to you is rumor, as far as I'm concerned. Okay, those investigators shouldn't be sharing evidence with people, if there is evidence. So, if there's evidence that needs to be shown to us, but we can't base financial decisions on rumor and personnel decisions based on rumor, we got to see the evidence.
I can tell you now, there's less people, our administrators, than at any time in my tenure here. You have Joe, you have Chris, and you have Andrew. Three people in this room.
Oh, for what?
For the mail server.
I don't think Joe is an email administrator.
Oh, he's not. Okay, I thought he was. Okay, so Trina. So it's just you three. And Trina's not even. She's on the Barracuda.
Yeah.
So it's just two.
Just two.
So you just have two.
Before him, he was it. Can I ask that question?
I believe.
More.
Yeah. More than on my right. More than on my hand.
But if someone acted improperly, and they would care to show us the evidence, I think we'd address that as a personnel
that's
issue.
Personnel, yeah.
We'd take care of that rather quickly. But you're right to, you know, myself, I don't like to have employees that I don't understand what they're doing, and I think an admin would be best, should really be in the IT department rather than you. Trying to manage your own thing, and if we're going to have different departments go their own way to build systems, I mean, we really need to do it in a project so everyone's doing the same thing. We can bid it as one project, not everyone go separately. We could. The most efficient thing would be to have one big project to take care of all of this correctly and bid it out as
my thoughts are.
Bidding's necessary.
Mark Vanette is over the courts, and I have people that work for him that work for me, and I could take somebody out of there with his permission and split their cost and then have them be, and then it would actually be a court person as your cloud administrator.
Yeah.
And I think that's something you'd probably find
those are things I said. I'm willing to explore every possibility. I'm not married to, you know, any one thing at this point. I said the only thing I'm married to is doing something, because I am not at all comfortable, and first off, I would point out the information that was shared with me wasn't shared improperly. It was part of their investigation. They were showing me stuff to ask me questions about it as a witness to a potential crime, and there's nothing improper about that. So that's why I am. Here, that's what I want to tell you. So, not asking you to do anything.
Okay. Well, and just from finance, also, I back with what Jamie is. Till I am not going to expend large sums in taxpayers' dollars. I would like our systems to be secure, and for every department to have security. And we are addressing those issues now. But to allocate money for your department or another department just because you saw something that I can't verify, I can't justify that to the taxpayers. But I think the team is being, going forward to try to address some of these issues in a affordable manner. So, Thank you.
Is that all? Any more new business? We don't have an executive session. We have a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you
so much. Did you play top floor?
So I gotta ask. I didn't hit you with my chair, did I?
No, you're fine.
I just can't do it.
Yeah, I'll be.